merge the two systems. Instead of accepting what we're asking, he is again falling into the trap of trying to teach us. And I find that very revolting at times, that you won't sit down and listen to what is being said. Part of the reason for the dissatisfaction with the Claims Settlement Act is not that it's throwing away our lands, not that it's political genocide, as was discussed earlier, but it is actually true cultural genocide as well. Our systems are inherently our culture. And you're sitting there trying to tell us that a municipal form of home rule is the answer? Very short-sighted. Sooner or later, with the crunch of population and non-natives, that municipal system is going to be taken over by non-natives, and then their value systems will be shoved on us. We're not dissatisfied with the corporation. We realize the subsistence economy is an economy that is going. Sooner or later, it's going to be gone. We're not against making money. I mean, that's the system we're going to be forced, if we're going to survive economically and have food on our tables. I mean, that's a fact of life. Every culture changes, but there are some things we want to retain. And our systems of government is one of them, because that ensures our cultural survival. You talk about racially segregated political subdivisions. If we are going to survive as a people, we have to maintain a separate political entity. There's no other way we will be able to survive as a people. I mean, this is a proven fact as Western society came across the country. And what's making it a little difficult in Alaska is Alaska still has some of that old basic pioneer spirit. I mean, this is the last frontier. And there's still kind of a mentality that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. Not as much as there was when I was a lot younger. It is fading because we are being invaded by a second group of non-natives. And that's the new generation from America who have lost most of that pioneer spirit, thank God. They are finally coming to realize they are part of the community of man, and that man should be able to live as he so desires. But we still have that fringe element. It just rose its ugly head in the paper the other day. A Ku Klux Klan type of organization. Even in America, the Americans finally realized that that wasn't the way for people to get along. But this state still can embrace those concepts because of the last frontier mentality. The domineering mentality. Our governments were not understood. And so one of the systems that was getting rid of our governments was that you ignored the systems. You tore apart the credibility of the systems themselves by total ignorance of them. You turned your back on those systems, put in place your own systems. Those elements of any society, those violent elements of any society, those who will not conform, are also alive and well in the Native community as well as they are in your community. When they saw that they could subvert their own governmental systems and controls, they readily did it. When they were able to use the excuse that the white man says, your law doesn't apply to me anymore. You very successfully tore apart those local value systems by giving those people who will normally break laws because of new human emotions, greed, avarice, whatever, you gave them an out, and every person will take an out if he can get one. I mean, that's just human nature. None of us are Puritans. We look for the easy way a lot of times. But the village governments worked as long as they were respected. And the IRA Act, I was in one of the villages doing one of our sub-regional workshops in 1991. And an old lady came up to me and she said, "Spud, tell me one thing. What is IRA? You know, we've been talking these things for the last few years and using this bureaucratic jargon." And I said to her, "Really, it's just another word for your village government, village council, sitting down making decisions, sitting down planning, sitting down making the rules, deciding issues." "Oh, okay." Most of the people are so close to that government system, they don't even realize they have a government. They don't even realize they're doing it. It's so natural, so easy, that it's done, and most of the people don't even realize that they're doing it. So I wish when you're measuring success and what is a success, that you will take out another yardstick and quit using your own.
Thanks, Bud. I think David and you are at cross purposes. I think I should give David the floor.
Okay, thanks. I knew there was a danger in saying anything. But I didn't intend to imply that Alaska Native villages should become state home rule municipalities. My point is that they should be treated as with the same dignity or more dignity, actually, than a state home rule municipality, that the state, in effect, should recognize village home rule based on native sovereignty and according to native institutions in native communities. And that should include superpowers to control what is important to that native community, including exclusion of non-natives, I would suggest, and other culturally necessary, appropriate, whatever you, important powers. The idea, though, in my suggestion is that, look, this is an ideal in state government already, not the exclusion of people from a community. That has to do with individual rights under the U.S. Constitution. But it is the idea that a community should be able to control itself is an ideal within the state framework, state legal framework, at least. And I'm just suggesting that you carry that a little further, and what that means is that a culture in a community should be able to control itself. And that is something that is not entirely inconsistent with the idea of home rule in the state. But it can be carried a bit further and called tribal home rule or village home rule, as I've suggested. And that's the point. I was not suggesting that Native communities should be satisfied with state of Alaska municipal home rule.
The Mary, you wanted to say something? Mary Miller.
Just to restate what Mr. Case just said, it's my understanding that you're proposing that the concept of home rule can be applied and implemented under the governmental powers of tribal governments. Is that
correct?
That's
correct, right.
Okay. Given that fact, I think that it's important for us to read the paper very carefully before we just throw it out the door. It's very easy to look at key terms and mistake them or misinterpret them, misunderstand them. And that's just one thing I wanted to recommend for all of us. The second thing is that I've heard people talk about identifying and defining our ideals. I agree with that completely. I think it's been very clearly stated and established by the over 1,000 testimonies that Mr. Berger has collected that we have two very clear ideals, generally. One of them is to maximize the protection of our lands, maximize them, not negotiate them away. The second thing is to honor our right to govern ourselves. Our people, when you look at people generally, not the people who are in leadership positions, but people generally, the average resident of our small communities, we're still very confused. We have been trying to understand the Land Claims Act. We have been trying very hard with the village corporation structures to make them work. We have been trying to figure out what to do with city governments because a lot of the people are afraid of losing state funding. So I think it's important to realize that these are very agonizing tasks that we face as people, as Native people. One thing that when we think about our ideals of protecting our land and guaranteeing our right to self-government, and also recognizing that there are some village corporations who are succeeding, who have had the luck of succeeding, of looking at the option of separating out the business activities of that corporation from the land ownership, and then in that context, look at tribal governments as a viable, feasible option. We have been trying to make everything work and being in generally a confused state. I don't mean to say that as applying to everybody, but generally people still are confused. Now we are looking at questioning the very feasibility of these institutions that we've been trying so hard to make work. So as we look at options that are available to us, I think it's very important to try to include in our discussion means of process, means of people being able to start at the right point in figuring out what to do to deal with this confusion, clarify the issues, and come to a good starting point so that it will maximize participation of all of those people whose future we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Charles Wilkinson.
Just very briefly, David, do I understand that what you are proposing would be a system under state law that is similar to the current system under federal law, in that Native villages would have self-rule, choose their own court systems, membership would be defined by Alaska Natives, but that it would be a matter of state law, and that secondly, you are not addressing the issue of hunting and fishing. You are addressing substantially all jurisdictional issues except hunting and fishing, which you just don't deal with here, and presumably leave to other means.
Well, no, I guess I even think that hunting and fishing would, although it's politically difficult to see how that would be worked out, but that even that should be one of the important powers that if home rule is going to mean anything from a Native village standpoint, that there really is, as I understand it from the villages we've heard from, there is an aspiration, a desire to control hunting and fishing at that level.
What would be the territorial limits of the hunting and fishing prerogatives?
Well, that's a difficult question. I mean, the easiest answer, but the least satisfying one, is the lands that are owned by the village or tribe. Now, I suppose you could carve and describe jurisdictional boundaries beyond tribally owned land, but that's pretty clearly going to get you into dealing with the federal and the state governments on those points, but it's conception. You know, you can think about it; it can be done.
But doesn't your whole
territorial jurisdiction? Mm-hmm. So some of these things exist as if that, I mean, are real. So we have some real dynamic functioning things that are not abstract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a look at AEWC. At the Subsistence Roundtable in October, but later in the tomorrow, the next day, I'd like to come back to the kind of thing that that you're referring to. That is, if you do develop an idea for tribal government at the village level, village home rule, whatever you want to call it, then is that a concept that people feel can be extended and applied on a regional level? It seems to me that's a tricky question in many ways. But you were you had another question, I think.
Well, on that point, you may get to places where it would be possible to federate communities, the lands that are close to one another, villages that have a common history and family relationships and so on, could, and I think there's movements in that direction in some parts of Alaska to federate.
You see, it seems to me the reason I distinguish the two is it seems to me entirely reasonable to set up a system of tribal self-government under state or federal law, which is limited in fairly tight to the villages, because most issues will be near villages. But that hunting and fishing just involves more acres, more land. And it seems to me that hunting and fishing, you ought to come about it from a different concept, which is that Alaska Natives can hunt and fish for subsistence throughout substantially all the state of Alaska. And it doesn't seem to me you want to tie that into the villages. So that's why I would treat them differently. So I can see you borrowing from the reservation system for matters such as zoning, taxation, child welfare, that whole range of issues, and crimes, but not borrowing from the reservation system on the questions of subsistence.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that is a good point. And maybe there, when you get down to thinking about it and how it should really work, there would be, and people would conclude that another way would be better. But
let me ask just one last
question. I think we'll have to try to maintain some sort of order. Charles, you had one more question, and then Sam George wanted to say something.
And I do just have one more. Do you propose substantially the same system under state law rather than federal law, David, because you believe it would be of greater long-term or short-term benefit to natives? Or do you propose it because you see it as more practical and perhaps easier to achieve politically? In other words, do you see your proposal as creating a greater quantum of power for natives, or do you propose it because it might be easier to implement?
Sheldon said both. I'm fine. I'm ambivalent. I'm not sure of the answer. Oh, okay. But I think there's a risk. Let me say this. There's a risk in taking a step because you think that it is practical or more likely to be achieved. I guess I agree with your earlier statement that it is important to begin with what the communities that are living with this want, whether it's the Menominee or the Tsleil-Waututh or the Texas Kickapoo or communities in Alaska. Because, as Spuds maybe suggested, there's a danger that us outside consultants and so forth will take a narrow view of what is practical. And we don't have to live with the result of that. And so I'm inclined to say that if this is, this suggestion is really, I mean, I don't want to back away from it. It's my proposal, for Christ's sake. I do. I don't want to own this thing and have it swinging around my neck like a dead bird.
Let David finish, Charlie.
I do think it's important to start thinking in practical terms about what we got on the ground, and what'll work, and also in terms of what people want, and marry the two up. Yeah. And I do think we may be stuck with a non-reservation situation in most of Alaska.
So there tends to be more the pragmatism side of it that causes you to propose it, rather than the idea that Alaska law provides greater protections.
No, absolutely right. If you could have a reservation or means of holding land in trust for Alaska Native communities, and that was an achievable goal, this wouldn't be a close second.
Yeah. Sam George.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I've been listening and observing all this time, and before we go any further, I feel that I appreciate the panelists that came all the way from all over the nation here, but the fact that we should point out is that all this time and all through the history of the dealings with the Native people, we have been victimized by so-called experts from the outside, and we are the ones, we are the victims of being planted, and the victims that have to live with all these creations such as ANSCA. But I don't mean to criticize the point, but it's always the case. And basically, I think, looking at the topic of this discussion, you know, we are the ones that should decide our future. And I've been listening to all these experts, so-called experts, and they're trying to figure out what's best for the Native people. And you know, the answer to that is we are the ones that should say what we want, and they're the ones that should, you know, carry out our wishes. As far as some of the topics we've talked about, such as jurisdiction, you know, more or less we've been, the Native people have been told that we have no such land base and so on. But the fact is we are the ones that know our land more than, you know, so-called experts from the state government. And as far as our hunting and fishing activities, you know, there's no way the state of Alaska can ever, you know, prosecute our people, you know, from breaking their state laws. But, you know, we are the ones that are experts in that area. And as far as definition of Indian law referring to reservation, I feel that, you know, it's just by definition that we are not reservation. And I'm sure that you guys will agree with my point. But it's just by definition that we are differentiated from other Indian tribes. And with respect to the home rule, you know, I understand the concept of that, but you know, that's basically one of the main reasons why we ever kicked out the city of Akichuk is to, you know, it's to practice our rights, you know, as self-governing people. And the you know, as far as the home rule under the, you know, under the, you know, the created under the state law, I suppose you're referring to the state. Under the state law, you know, it's very easy for, you know, for, as soon as, you know, the population changes, such as in city of Bethel, then it's, you know, the power changes hands, and I'm sure that all over the state, it will always be a case. And it's not based on, you know, one of the main reasons why we want to have one tribal government is to have, you know, more control of our own destiny. And going back to the statehood, you know, the fact is that our people were not involved in the process of adopting the state constitution. And here we are trying to convince the state to recognize our rights as tribal governments. And to this day, the state people do not even understand that we exist and do not wish to recognize us. And it's just the main reason is that they assume that, you know, it was for the best interest of the people. But I hope that the panelists here would address, you know, not only address, but I really wish that there would have been more of our people here to address this particular issue, and very, you know, few experts from all over the nation. But that's basically what I wanted to point out. Thank you.
Yeah, well, look, let me say that I invited these experts here, and there's a reason for that. And let's deal with this now. I've heard from 1,000 Alaska Natives, more than that, all year, in 52 villages. And they've said, we are concerned about the possibility of losing our land. That's the paramount thing. And they've said, so isn't there a safe place we can keep it? And many, many of them say, well, let's transfer it to the IRA Council. All right, I think that they've made their wishes plain. Now, they'd say, sometimes let's transfer it to the IRA. Sometimes they say, let's transfer it to a cooperative or a nonprofit association.
although, and sometimes they say, well, let's take our chances with the corporation. Not many say that, but some do. Now, in any scheme that's worked out, it seems to me you're going to have native corporations still in business, making money or losing money, whatever it happens to be. You're going to have land, native ancestral land, that people feel is theirs and ought to remain theirs for the next generation and generations to come. And you're going to have a desire by native people to have an awful lot to say about what happens on that land and in their communities. So I think that on the basis of what people in those villages have said to me, I've got a pretty good idea of what's in their minds. Now, it's fine to say, I could write a report that said, well, here it is, people want to govern themselves, so restore native government. It could be said in one paragraph, if we wanted to proceed in that way. But where in the end does that get people? It seems to me that it's useful to bring these people from all over the nation and from other nations together to talk about how all of these things might be achieved and to see how those ideas stand up under scrutiny. And David has put forward an idea about village home rule government. It seems to me that gives us something to talk about, to explore the ramifications of what he has said. I think the discussion ought to proceed on the footing. Well, this is an idea that is an attempt to build a legal structure based on what those people in the villages have said. Now, I'm concerned about this. All right, you say you want tribal government. You've got traditional councils. You've got IRAs. Well, is that all there is to it? Are those functioning in a way that suits the people there? If they got the land, should the land be held in trust? What about the supervision of IRA activities by the Secretary of Interior? Is that what you want? What about reservations? Is that really what you're talking about? Or are we talking about something else that might, in the end, serve as a model, perhaps, for Native people in the lower 48? Then there's the question of hunting and fishing. Now, it seems to me that is absolutely vital. Let me finish. Spud Williams said that he thought in the years to come there would be no subsistence, that Native people wouldn't be making their living that way. In parts of Alaska I've been to, I think that he might find that people would disagree with him. I think in southwest Alaska, where you come from, the people would say, no, for as long as we can foresee, we think that we are going to be engaged in making a subsistence living here. So what is the jurisdiction that tribal governments ought to have in relation to subsistence? And what are the implications of all of this from the point of view of the jurisdiction the state claims and the federal government? If we don't spend the next 3 days exploring these things, it seems to me we will have lost an opportunity. And that's why I, Sam, that's why I told these folks to come. And I think that it's been useful to have this discussion this afternoon. But I would really like all of you to address some of these questions that I've raised. When we adjourn today, I'm going to ask Rosita and David to help me to present an agenda tomorrow that might truly reflect where, in light of the discussion today, perhaps we should be going. But I think that to imply that we send all these folks home and say we know exactly what has to be done here, I don't think that's going to get us as far as we should be going. Well,
Your Honor.
Yeah. No, you just don't have to call me Your Honor, Charlie. Go ahead.
I'd like to clarify one fact here. Some of us here are stockholders, and we're going to vote our share. And I'm glad that some of you are not going to vote mine. So, So let's be more cautious on whose ticket, whose land, whose rights are we talking about? So none of you here have my permission to talk about what is mine. And so I'd like to make that fact very clear. And so some of us are highly desired to go back to a federal restoration program. I have made a recommendation that that this body reveals some Title 28, the jurisdiction of the United States, to reveal this process so that some of you who are not Americans will become familiar with American jurisprudence, and that we want to exhaust this remedy, and the way to exhaust this remedy is that the findings of the facts that have been made available to this body are not going to change. They're not going to change if we go back to Congress tomorrow or the next day, that the wrong and the degree of the wrong is so large that that what may change is the attitude, the arrogance that the American Congress imposed upon these things that they have never done to others is what we are mad about. And so those of us who are speaking from equity, we are forced to tell you our alienation of this bad deal that you guys gave us. And so since we are dealing with this horrible process, all of this is coming out, that it has to come out, it cannot stay in there. So all of the social experiments are over. And so the process and the evolution, this political process that we are going through, Congress is going to have some new assignments, that there is a future to look forward to, and I would like to roll this Alaskan body open so that we can go start lobbying Congress so that we cannot talk about semantic injustice here, so we can take it to Congress, so we can start doing our work, and maybe that your professional opinion would be of some merit to an Anglo-Saxon congressman of your Anglo-Saxon view on how bad we got shafted. And so I view the gravest injustice that has been going on among the Alaska Natives has been a failure by the United States government to determine land in holdings of the Indian Reorganization tribes in Alaska, number one. Number two is that the valid existing rights that the United States purport to protect has not received any protection, meaning that state of Alaska on the core township has commenced trespass. Therefore, that there are innumerous 2415 claims which the Bureau of Indian Affairs have not filed, proceed. So we are behind 70 years of backlog cases, and which have been compounded by ANCSA. So what is the easiest way out of this mess, as we see it, is to go back to and examine the American jurisprudence and to hop on the American ship. And this means federal preemption. Indian law is a preempted field, and once and for all, state of Alaska, you cannot get into the Eskimo business without our permission, and we don't want you in our territory without our permission. So when you get back to the bases and deal with the sovereign relationship, not that Congress is completely have plenary powers, it is not in an absolution. And so therefore that I think our attitude toward this problem and some new ideas of to wash out of your mind social Darwinist attitudes about American administration which have functions to this point, that we have to look at some new enlightened philosophies. And one of them definitely has to be, why are these Alaska Natives don't like what they receive? Because their consent was not sought out for. The basic violation, the basic human right, the basic bitter root of truth was they were not asked for. So in order for justice to be done in the American sense, that we have to go back to Congress and says, by God, we gave it a good try, and look at the mess that we have made. What a great deal we have. And so otherwise, that we may have to bring in and prosecute the expert witnesses who have given this corporation expert advice in the name of racketeering. Maybe that the greatest defense for the Alaska Native people is the Racketeering Act. Is it illegal for a corporation to go in the red? Is it unconstitutional when they go in the red? What is this legality of profit? So if you want to put some tighter constraints, we don't know of any new tricks. So the only trick that I see that is going to get us out of this mess is to go back and says, well, I'm sorry, Scoop Jackson, that we did not mean to be bad-mouth you now that you are gone, but we're going to have to relook at Section 2 and Section 4. I'm sorry, Scoop, it didn't work. You know, we gave it a good try, but we're going to turn the other cheek and say, we want to remain under an American administration, under American flag. What is so hard and so desirous for Alaska Natives and Eskimos to have? Why is it so hard for us to communicate to you our basic desire?
Yeah.
In which position is the cheek in this time? Are we going to be standing up?
Yeah. That's a rhetorical question, I think. Sheldon, you wanted to add something?
One of the things that has created a lot of the problems that we're facing right now has been a lot of propaganda on the part of that organization that was supposedly looking out for our best interest, that being the BIA. You ask the Alaska Natives, the leaders at the time, what kind of an education they got regarding reservations in the lower 48. What was the attitude of the Bureau of Indian Affairs? What was the direction that they wanted you to go in identification with that old parallel, cowboys and Indians? The attitude of the Bureau of Indian Affairs in that particular old ball game was that they wanted Alaska Natives to think that they are special and therefore different from the Indian of the lower 48. And therein was the beginning, the germ that was set for the orderly and quote-unquote legal takeover of the territory of Alaska and hence the state of Alaska. The IRA Act of 1934 purports to identify the right of Alaska Native tribal governments to make for ourselves this constitution and bylaws. And it goes on to state that as far as choice of governing body, at a general meeting following the acceptance of this constitution, the village membership shall decide what kind of governing body it wishes to set up to speak and act for the village and to use the powers of the village. You mentioned fish and game. As far as natives are concerned, there is no such thing as fish and game. It is all food. And as far as food is concerned, the location of our villages is prime evidence that we were concerned, number one, with the protection of that resource, that food, the renewable resources of our land. And as such, the Constitution under the IRA Act recognizes that we have the power to deal with the federal and territorial governments on matters which interest the village, interest in lands, as the Act itself says. What is the native interest in lands? Primarily, subsistence resources. For Alaska's natives, subsistence is, I keep having to iterate this, subsistence is not a way of life. Subsistence is life, and anything done to regulate that is interference with our life. And according to our Constitution that you wrote up and printed, we have the right to protect that resource and be absent from any interference, not only by the federal government, but also by any third party, including the state of Alaska.
Mary Miller.
I think that it's important for us to recognize where alliances are possible and to form these alliances. And because of that, I'm willing to listen and have a dialogue with people who have been invited to this panel. One thing that really concerns me as far as tribal governments are concerned and our ability to govern ourselves is that our people have to face the fundamental question of the continued existence of city governments, state-chartered municipalities in our communities. It's not working having a dual government, two of them, especially if there are different people who serve on both. There is one community in my region whose city government is the IRA government and whose IRA government is the city government. I don't know if that'll work, but in that sense, they have managed not to conflict with one another. But that's not happening in the rest of the villages.
Do you mean they're exactly the same people?
The exact same people serve on both. And at this point, they're managing the situation, but they don't know what the future will hold as far as whether that can continue. We're having difficulty facing this issue, but I think we have to do it. If we're talking about planning, long-term planning for the governance of our people, we have to face and contend with this phenomenon that we face right now in our communities of having city governments and tribal governments.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. John Hope, you wanted to say something?
Well, it
Well, I think coffee time has come and gone. it's all gone, apparently. Yeah, would you please, Mr. Hope?
Judge Pruder, members of the commission, I think it's a fine commentary on both the United States government and the tribes that still exist that after 200 years of formally addressing these problems, we're still both here to address these problems. I'm not sure who's going to be the survivor. I think when we talk about political solutions, and I think that's what this is going to end up, I think that's the only way to solve these things. I think all of us have an ideal solution, and I know we'll not reach that point. As some of you might remember, John Collier was an activist who really understood the Indian problem. And he was attacking government for its failure to meet its responsibility. And by chance, he became the Commissioner of Indian Affairs. And he knew the problems and he knew the solution. And he was not able to engineer and get through all of the remedies that he saw. But he did get the Indian Reorganization Act as we understand it. And it was a political process. He did get many of the things that he thought were desirable. And when you deal with a political structure, you know that the end result is not going to be perfect. It's going to be imperfect. We have experienced a few years now under what was supposed to be an improvement. A lot of people did not appreciate the Indian Reorganization Act and the burdens that it carried with it.